We're talking with a GOP strategist who's held dozens of focus groups in recent years with women who voted for President Trump in 2016. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have conservative women voters reached a tipping point? In the past, they've given the president high marks on a solid economy, but low marks on his divisive rhetoric. Amid COVID, now what? Are you a woman who voted for President Trump in 2016? Why did you vote for him? And what do you think of the job he's done so far? Will you vote for him in November? It's 800-642-1234. Sarah Longwell is founder of the group Republican Voters Against Trump. She's publisher of the conservative news site The Bulwark. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've been this longtime Republican consultant and strategist, now working to prevent President Trump from being reelected. Hundreds of testimonials on your site. What is it about President Trump and the current GOP that is troubling to you?
Well, you know, I've thought that President Trump was unfit to be president from the moment that he came down the escalator. In fact, I took him not seriously at all in the beginning, which was obviously a mistake. But I think that it really goes to something that conservatives have cared about for a long time, which is character, of which Trump's character is bad. And I think he's tearing the country apart. I believe that he's corrupt. I would like to see somebody else be president in 2020.
So character is job one. You have talked with so many women in focus groups who voted for President Trump of all backgrounds. Tell us about why you're doing this, these focus groups.
Well, you know, because I had been a Republican my entire life, when the party nominated Trump and then, you know, he was elected president, I wanted to understand what was going on with the party. I was concerned about the country. I was concerned about the party. I just wanted to know what people were thinking, what was driving people to vote for somebody who just, to me, you know, seemed just wildly unfit to be the president of the United States. And I think there was a couple things going on that I've heard really consistently. One is Hillary Clinton. You know, when it comes to Republican voters and right-leaning independents, you just cannot overstate the extent to which voters did not want to see Hillary Clinton be president. For decades, they had sort of loathed the Clintons. And it's clear that, you know, in 2016, it was a time where people were not interested in political dynasties. Jeb Bush figured that out pretty quickly. And so in every focus group I do, when I ask women, hey, why did you vote for Donald Trump? Invariably, somebody always says the line, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I voted against Hillary Clinton. So I think that was one big piece, the kind of negative polarity that dominates our politics, not voting affirmatively for something, but voting against something. The second thing that I hear all the time is the idea that Donald Trump was a businessman, you know, and that people thought that it was time for a businessman to kind of go in and shake things up. And he didn't sound like a normal politician. And so I think when you couple the idea that people didn't want to see Hillary Clinton become president, and they were kind of like, you know, I don't like this guy's rhetoric. I don't like some of the things that he said. I don't like, you know, obviously everybody saw the Access Hollywood tape. So they had reservations, but they were kind of willing to take a chance on him, take a flyer. Because one thing that I think people in Washington forget all the time is that so many people watched Donald Trump on The Apprentice. And they saw him as this carefully curated, consummate businessman. And so a lot of voters really had that figure in their head, you know, the person who decisively fired celebrities for 8 years and who was in their living room. And so they felt to some degree like they knew him. And so that gave them the confidence to go ahead, even though they had these reservations, to sort of take a chance on him. But that is different than where we find ourselves now after 3 years of watching him govern.
And you mentioned the Access Hollywood tapes from 2016, which recorded President Trump bragging about sexually assaulting women. Why do you think the tape didn't have more of an effect with women, with this demographic?
You know, I bring this up a lot, not just the tape, but also his history of sexual assault. And I think there's a couple things going on that oftentimes make me, you know, sort of sad about the way that people feel about things. One is that there is a kind of forgiveness for celebrities, and you know that while he's not a regular, politician, and he's a celebrity, and he, so he said some crazy things, and I don't like it. I mean, this is what I hear all the time. I don't like it, but I do think that I people sort of say that they take sort of the bigger picture into account, and they just one of the things, this is why Hillary Clinton, it tended to be almost uniquely a uniquely bad person for Donald Trump to be running against, was because it's so easy for people to immediately point to Bill Clinton and his behavior. It's the reason that when Donald Trump brought Bill Clinton's accusers to one of the debates, it was gross, but also strategically quite brilliant, because it reminded people that kind of, it gave them that kind of whataboutism line. The, well, hey, Hillary Clinton, went after the victims of Bill Clinton. And so ultimately people were sort of like, look, there's going to be a sexual predator in the White House one way or the other. And it became, they sort of nullified that criticism in people's minds. And so they were able to say, well, look at the other side. And that sort of gave them what they needed to go ahead and support Trump.
We're talking with Sarah Longwell, who is the founder of the Republican Voters Against Trump, publisher of The Bulwark. We're talking about conservative women voters, where they stand ahead of November, with your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Sarah, I wonder, as you talked with these women, how forthcoming were they? Did you believe the insights that they were telling you about their vote?
I do. And part of the reason that I do is because I've done so many focus groups at this point. I mean, I started doing them in early 2018 and then have done them very consistently over the last 18 months, every couple of weeks. And the answers are so consistent across the groups. And so, I mean, not always, obviously there are outliers and there, people are different. There's some regional differences, but generally speaking, especially on the question you just asked about why they voted for Donald Trump, the answers are incredibly consistent. And so I do believe when you hear the same things over and over again, you do start to understand sort of different kinds of voters. Cause even in the bucket that I talk to, right? So this is, I talk to typically both college educated and non-college educated women, both, but I think with a slightly higher proportion of college educated women, all of whom voted for Trump in 2016, but now rate him as doing either a somewhat bad or a very bad job. Because for me, I'm thinking about, okay, who are the members of this party? If you think about what the future of the Republican Party is going to look like, I want to understand these voters who both have found themselves being willing to vote for Trump, but sort of reject him and don't think he's doing a good job. So that's who I've been looking to understand. But I do the focus groups, at this point, I didn't always, but since the pandemic hit, I've been doing them virtually over Zoom, and I do them myself. And so, I spend a lot of time, really trying to make sure that I'm pulling as much information out of these women as possible. And also the groups aren't that big. And so, with a group of women, you all kind of get to know each other pretty quickly and bond over some of the mutual shared things. A lot of people have kids. A lot of people are coping with the similar things during the pandemic. And so I think people have been really forthright.
What do they say about the tweeting?
They hate the tweeting. That is consistent. And in fact, the criticisms of Donald Trump amongst these groups, I start the groups always sort of the same way. I ask people how they feel like things are going in the country, and they all think things are going very, very badly, which is consistent with the polling that we've seen. And then I ask them, I tell them right up front, hey, look, you're all Trump voters who think he's doing a very bad job. Tell me why you think he's doing a very bad job. And the tweeting is one of the first things that come up. The divisiveness always comes up. The fact that he is actually making things worse in the country. You do hear a lot of people point to racism as a real problem. And just generally, it's the chaos that people really react to. They don't like the chaos. Now, that being said, while they all sort of And some of them recognize other things too. They'll say things like he's not a real conservative, which of course is something that I believe very strongly. This is not a person who's a conservative. But they do all when you push them. So it's funny because when you start the focus groups, they're all really down on Trump. They roll their eyes and they think he's he's just terrible and that, you know, he lies and he's a narcissist. Everyone always says narcissist. He's a bully. But then you think, oh, well, of course, none of these people would vote for Trump again. And that's true in some instances. I would say that, you know, in every group of Trump voters, there's always a few people who are now either definitely voting for Biden or leaning toward voting for Biden, oftentimes about half the group. But there's the other half that is either completely undecided or is still leaning toward Trump. And it's because they believe that as much as they dislike all of those things, they also think that he often doesn't get a fair shot from the media, that, you know, the media is relentlessly negative about him, that he has done some good things, that prior to the pandemic, the economy was doing well and he didn't get enough credit for that. And so there is a kind of defensiveness on his behalf that you see come through, despite the fact, and I'll tell you one other just about the tweeting in particular. It's funny, they hate the tweeting, but almost none of them are on Twitter. I mean, very seldom do you actually get somebody who says, oh yeah, I'm on Twitter, I see it play out. They just see it either on the news or
it's like residual, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm wondering, have their views changed since the pandemic, since their situations have changed so much in their life since the pandemic?
Undoubtedly, yes, that is true. And it's been the benefit of doing these sort of consistently over time, which is that, you know, I was able to see them during the impeachment episode where people really did kind of retrench for Trump and were kind of on his side, even though they thought he did something wrong. But as time has gone on, the thing is about the pandemic is the personal consequences that they've suffered as a result of the pandemic. And they do not think he's handled it well. And so you do hear more and more of these women saying, the stakes are just too high now, and I can't support him going forward.
Well, let's pause there. We have, as we talk about the Republican Party and what happens next, you can join in 800-642-1234 as we talk with Sarah Longwell, the founder of the Republican Voters Against Trump, back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Republican strategist Sarah Longwell, who is not supporting President Trump's reelection bid, is backing Joe Biden. She's talked extensively with conservative women voters in recent years and in current times, pandemic times. She launched the group Republican Voters Against Trump, assembling hundreds of testimonials from Republican voters who have seemingly cut ties with the party in this election. Let's take another call now. Mark joining us from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What's interesting to me is your guest rightly mentioned about how people didn't trust Hillary Clinton. A lot of people didn't like her. But just how much James Comey helped Trump in building that perception. You know, his comments in July before the election about her, and then a week before the election coming out and saying they found more emails and they were going to have to reinvestigate her. And, you know, they've turned Comey into this kind of terrible person who hated Trump. He really helped him get elected.
Sarah, what do you see there in President Trump's firing of former FBI Director James Comey?
Well, I think that's an extremely good point, actually, that the caller just made that gets lost all the time, which is that, you know, there is this narrative that Donald Trump has constructed that James Comey and the deep state were out to get him when, of course, if anybody was hurt by sort of the investigations that were going on, the investigation that was ongoing into Trump's campaign was kept secret, while Hillary Clinton's, the investigation into her was made public and was kind of that, you know, late stage October surprise that undoubtedly had some impact on the election, in large part because it fit a narrative that people had in their minds about her. Of being corrupt and being deceptive. And as a result, it just, for people who were on the fence, and I'll tell you, in 2016, I think there were a lot of people on the fence because they didn't really like either candidate. It made a big difference in terms of like seeing in how independents broke, where they broke for Trump, because people just said, you know what, I've had it with the Clintons. I'm going to just take a chance on this other guy over here.
Let's bring in Joe now, joining us from Star Lake. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on the air. And what I want to say is I think that often people, analysts and people who came out of the academy in many different ways, really fail to appreciate the power of myth. And television is such an amplifier of mythic images and ideas. And I think often we act in ways we don't understand because myth drives it. So let me give you two examples, or three examples, very briefly with Trump. I was fascinated by when he bought the Miss Universe contest. And, you know, everybody says, oh, so he could go, you know, in the dressing rooms with beautiful women. But really what he was doing was he would constantly could be seen on television around the goddesses of our society, the Aphrodites and the Heras. And, in fact, he was like Paris. He was part of the judging of who is the most beautiful goddess. And then he made a deal with the Worldwide Wrestling Federation to have their WrestleMania happen at his casino, so he could be constantly, and if you look at the images, arms around, Samson and Achilles and all these people. And so now he's around the gods, the male gods, the hero, the warrior gods.
Well, let's let Sarah jump in here on the power of myth, as Joe is saying, and these images of a President Trump and who he surrounds himself with.
Yeah, it's an excellent observation. And I think, you know, there's a story that came out very recently where Donald Trump is quoted, I believe it's in Michael Cohen's book, where they knew that if the Stormy Daniels piece got out, Trump said, well, my voters will think it's cool that I slept with a porn star. And, you know, while that makes me, you know, while I am very sort of grossed out by this person's behavior, what Donald Trump, I think, understands and with his kind of low cunning, this lizard brain that he has, is that people evaluate celebrities different than they do sort of normal politicians. And so because Donald Trump has been part of the American imagination for so long in these different ways, I mean, he's in a Home Alone movie, you know, he's just been around on Page Six for so long, everybody kind of knew who he was. And so the normal things that would just absolutely crater a normal politician don't even touch him. And voters who have identified with the Republican Party, which has made character and decency and values and morals central to who it was as a party, to just sort of completely turn their back on that and endorse somebody like Donald Trump, it goes to, because people have this image of him and is in their head that sort of transcends politics in this way that allows him to just get away with anything. And so I think it's a good observation.
What are the observations from the focus groups on their views on the Black Lives Matter movement, the protests, the protesters and what they've been called, agitators, looters, rioters? How are the women responding to this?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting thread through the focus groups because it's changed a little bit. You know, I would say one of the things that's been most interesting to me is that more than the pandemic and the intending economic crisis, I actually found that the racial crisis was moving more women than the other things. Like, they would talk about that as a reason to recoil from Donald Trump even more than the pandemic and the economic crisis. And I think, you know, it was interesting. I've done so many focus groups at this point that I get some repeats now. And so I was talking with this young woman in Pennsylvania, and I had been behind the glass for the first one that I saw her in. Because it was in real life back then. And she said something that had really stuck with me, where she had said she was going to vote for Donald Trump again, even though she thought he was doing a very bad job, because it was better to go with the poison you knew than the poison you didn't know. And so I fast forward to pretty recently, she was in the group again, and I could tell that she had moved significantly away from Trump in the time since I'd last seen her. And I told her, I said, hey, you know, I've actually seen you before. I remember what you said. Could you tell me, it seems like you've moved really far away from Trump. Can you tell me what changed? And she said it was these protests that she had been, you know, sort of with her family. She got stuck with her extended family during lockdown. And, you know, Fox News was on all the time. And it was during the George Floyd killing. And she just heard the way that they talked about it and couldn't stomach it herself. She felt like what happened to him was completely unjust. And it had made her unwilling to vote for Donald Trump again. And I have seen that really across the groups, where a lot of women, just white women, talking about how they just need to, you know, think more about the experience of Black people. And so there's been this real openness. Now, I will also say, though, in the more recent weeks, as there has been sort of violence that has gone on, that it seems now to be more separated from the precipitating event of George Floyd, I do think that there's been a little bit of a change. I did one most recently in Arizona, where a lot of the undecideds were pointing to the Kenosha events and saying that that was making them more likely to vote for Donald Trump. But then again, I had one the exact same night with a North Carolina group who had said that the protests had really, you know, opened their eyes about racial justice, and they thought Donald Trump just poured gasoline on the fire. And I honestly think it has a lot to do with age. I think younger conservative women really view the stuff that is happening around racial justice and are really for sort of reevaluating the ways that we think about race. I think older women tend to be a little more worried about the violence and seeing it through the lens of looting and rioting as opposed to racial justice.
There seemed to be a lot more indecision among these women headed into 2016. Are you running into undecideds now as you ask these questions?
I am still running into undecideds a lot, actually. And I would say that part of it is, especially, it's a lot of it has to do with the cohort that I'm specifically talking to. Because I'm talking to people who voted for Trump in 2016, but who don't think he's doing a good job. So these people are tribally Republican, right? They usually vote for Republicans. They voted for Trump once, but they don't like him. And so actually the thing that they are undecided about that I think is really going to change over the next couple months is they want to know, you know, we think, well, Joe Biden's been in public life for the last, 40 years. People have their minds made up about him. But it actually isn't true. He's quite undefined, especially in these people who are more or less Republicans. They don't pay as much attention to Democrats and what they do. And so there's a real sense of, well, I'm waiting to see him in the debates. That was something I just heard so much of in the focus groups, is I want to see the debates, because they do, when you talk about Biden, you know, Donald Trump is flooding Facebook and other, you know, social media channels with the idea that Joe Biden is senile, that he's, you know, completely lost it. And I think for voters, what's key to them is to making an affirmative vote for Biden is really just knowing more about him and making sure he's also there.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Longwell is a Republican strategist, founder of the group Republican Voters Against Trump, publisher of The Bulwark. Earlier, we heard from longtime conservative radio talk show host Charlie Sykes. You can listen back to both conversations in their entirety at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, it's 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.